Welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. I'm Kim Russo, the director of AGLCA. Today I have with me two gentlemen from the United States Power Squadron, Bob Anderson and Chuck Wells, and they are going to tell us everything we need to know for crossing into Canada. But before we get started on the topic at hand, I'd like to take a minute, as I always do, to recognize and thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, and Waterway Guide Media. And as always, we encourage all of our listeners to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. Bob and Chuck, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you, Kim.
If we can go ahead and start, just get a little bit of background from the two of you on your roles at the Power Squadron and how you came to be the presenter of the Power Squadron's webinars to date. And we've asked you to join us today specific to the webinar on crossing borders. So we thought we would turn to the experts, being you two, with the questions we have about that. But how did you get to the point where you're in this position at the Power Squadron? How did you develop the webinar program?
Well, this is Bob Anderson, and I started out in 1976 with the United States Power Squadron teaching a weather course. And as time progressed along, I became a member of the National Committee, the Marine Environment Committee, which is deals with the weather, cruising, cruise planning, and webinars, 500 millibar, and a new one is severe marine weather forecasting. And we have this one, Crossing Borders, is a webinar that we just finished up. We also have a new one coming online in January, which will be on board emergencies. Then we have several independent seminars besides that. And being on the committee, I first put together the Crossing Borders chapter in cruising and cruise planning and proceeded from there to put it into a seminar, which became a webinar. I'm now chairman of that committee, and my colleague that's with us today, Chuck, was the chairman and is now my assistant. So, Chuck?
Yes, well, just very briefly to add to that, I came into the U.S. Power Squadrons much later after I retired from the Department of Defense, so I've been a member for a little bit over 10 years. Had a great deal of interest in weather as well as the marine environment in general, and ultimately became the chairman of the committee before Bob. Consequently, we have a number of areas that we're responsible for in the committee in addition to weather, and that is one of those is cruising and cruise planning, and really everything connected with that, which of course includes crossing borders. So As I think we mentioned, this was a seminar, and we eventually turned it into a webinar, and it has been highly successful, and we're happy to be here today to answer some questions for your members.
Well, and we appreciate that because we always do have a lot of questions about this topic, and we are at the time of year where many of our members who are on kind of the traditional seasonal route for the loop, doing it all at once, and of course following the warm weather northward, are getting ready to enter Canada. So the timing is perfect for us to get some of the details from you. So let's kind of jump into the heart of the topic. Tell us what the procedures are for Americans that are entering Canada by boat. What do we have to do to go through customs? What should we expect?
Okay, I'll take that question. The first thing that an individual wants to do is put together a booklet that has all the information about their boat and the people they're traveling. This would include the vessel name, documentation, registration number, country of origin, the name of the captain, passport number or Nexus BR number, co-captain, and any other crew, and include your pet's certificate of vaccination, and what day you departed the U.S. If you take this information to the port of entry when you begin to clear customs, it just makes it a really speedy thing to do. So now let's look at what happens when we do go through customs. You enter the port of entry and you either call on a telephone or you go and do a face-to-face with the customs people. And the first question they're going to ask you is, your vessel name, sir, And they'll follow that up, your documentation number or registration number. And then they'll want to know what country of origin are you from, USA. And then they'll want to know your name and passport number. Or if you're using Nexus, they'll want your Nexus number, which is called a voter registration number. And then they'll want to know any additional crew that are on board and if you have pets. And then, of course, again, to repeat, what day you departed the U.S. and what day did you arrive in Canada, which should be the day that you're standing there at the customs entry port. The next thing you'll want to do is list the items, or they will ask you to declare for the Canadian Customs Department. Do you have any firearms on board? And, of course, you do not want to take a handgun into Canada, period. If you take a handgun in, you get to go to jail, and you'll probably lose your boat. If you have rifles or shotguns, you declare those, and they'll have to take a look at them. The next thing that they always ask is alcohol. Do you have alcohol on board? And you always tell them yes or no. And if you do, I always, like if it's whiskey, I'll give it to them in mLs, perhaps 1,000 mLs. So that pretty well is the situation. They will issue you a Canadian clearance number at that time. And you want to paste one of those on both sides of the boat in the window so that the people wandering the docks can look over and read that and to be sure that you really did clear into Canada.
Now, does that procedure vary at all depending on the port of entry, or does it really remain the same? I understand there's a nationwide regulation, but are there variances between the way some of the different ports of entry handle that whole process?
Well, yes, there is. They're basically the same. You have the face-to-face, such as Victoria, for instance, when you clear there. But if you go up the coast to Sydney, and you'll call them on the telephone, and you'll sit at a nice little table and give them the information. And then if you go over to Bedwell, which is across the way, you'll actually have a video camera, and you will do a face-to-face with the agent talking to him through a video conference type situation. If you go back to the east, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You have the different types of clearance.
But essentially it's the same information they're collecting regardless of the way you're providing that.
Yes.
Okay. Let's go back for a minute if we can. You mentioned that they will ask you if you have any alcohol on board. And you mentioned that if you have liquor or whiskey, whatever, that you would give that in the number of milliliters. We get a lot of questions about this. Loopers are notorious for having their docktails, so most of us would be carrying some form of adult beverage aboard. Are there limitations to how much you can take into Canada, and is that something that the agents are likely to want to see the same way they would want to see a rifle or a shotgun, for example?
Okay, in the case of alcohol, unless they suspect some impropriety, they don't really want to see it. But you're allowed to bring in 40 ounces of liquor, spirits, 24 cans of 12-ounce cans of beer, and 1.5 liters of wine. So you can bring those in with no problem. Now, if you have bottles that you have mixed drinks with, say, the day before, two, 3 days, and, for instance, if it's a 750 ml or a 1 liter bottle and you say, well, I have a half a liter of this particular liquor, they'll say, is that an open bottle? And you say yes, and they say, well, we don't count open bottles. But there again, you don't want to have a case and just open the caps on all of them and say, yeah, these are all open.
Right.
They'll suspect something that's wrong.
Okay. We had a previous discussion, and you brought to my attention some food items that you can't bring into Canada, which was something I had not heard and didn't know about. And if you could fill us in on that, because I know that was a fairly recent change in some areas.
Okay, Kim, this is Chuck. I'll take that question. Actually, when it comes to food items, this is also a changing topic. So this is one that I think anyone who's planning a cruise into Canada really needs to check the website, particularly that of the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, which has a rather detailed list of what you can and cannot bring into Canada. There's also the other problem of returning to the United States. And again, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection has a great website, and they have a nice brochure, actually, that details, again, what you can and cannot bring back and forth. And like I said, this does change, so I think it's one of those things for any specifics. General rule here is if you have frozen fruits and vegetables, for example, that's usually not a problem taking them back and forth. If you have any fruits or vegetables that are labeled as clearly being from the United States or Canada, it's usually not an issue of taking them back across or either in either direction. The problem becomes with any kind of fruit and vegetables that may not have any kind of sticker or label on it. If it does, then you're probably not going to be able to bring it back into the United States. Canada is actually a little bit more flexible and liberal on this topic because they have trade partners that are more extensive than ours. Unfortunately, some of those trade partners are not partners with the United States, and we prohibit any kind of produce coming from some of those countries. So again, the general rule here, frozen or canned, you're going to be able to take more. For example, into Canada, you can take up to 15 frozen packages or 15 cans per person. That's quite a bit that you can carry back and forth. But again, once you get into the fresh fruits and vegetables, it's extensively limited. And again, it's going to depend on what those labels are. There's even some restrictions on fresh fruit and vegetables that come from California, Idaho, Oregon, or Washington going into Canada. So again, I encourage everyone to check the website first before and as they're outfitting their boat for a crossing of the border.
And you said that's the Canadian Food Inspection?
Yes, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency. If you go to that website, that would
be great. That's helpful. Beyond fruits and vegetables, any concerns with any other fresh foods like meats or anything along that line?
Well, I kind of answered that.
Sure.
Because that just came through 2 weeks ago, and that concerns eggs and chicken. And because of the flu, you can no longer bring raw chicken or raw eggs into or out of Canada. So you have to cook them. If you cook your eggs and you cook your meat, then you can bring it in or out, but no raw.
Okay. And you said that's came into play about 2 weeks ago. So another good example of why we need to be checking that Canadian Food Inspection Agency's website as we're preparing. So thank you. That's extremely helpful. We often have posts in our discussion forum that talk about disconnecting the ability for our blackwater holding tank to be pumped overboard. Of course, loopers don't do that where that's not allowed to happen anyway. But we often hear some questions and some concerns about whether that there has to be an actual physical disconnect to that system when entering Canada. Can you address that for us?
Well, actually, Canada has very similar restrictions, almost the same, in fact, that the United States has on certain bodies of water. In general, there are certain zones, particularly in Ontario and then some interior lakes of British Columbia and Manitoba, that are essentially no discharge zones. And, of course, most Americans, I think, understand what that means. It means that literally that it doesn't matter what kind of system you have, whether you have an MSD 1 or 2, really you're going to have some way of preventing any of that treated water from entering any body of water. So, for example, Lake Champlain, I know that was one question I think I had heard at one point, is essentially a no-discharge zone. So any vessel going into Lake Champlain cannot discharge. Everything must go into a holding tank. Another item here that I just learned, actually, is that, for example, portable toilets are illegal on Ontario's waters. So any pleasure craft that has a portable toilet, which, of course, are legal in the United States, that if you're crossing into any of the waters of Ontario, you're going to have a hose installed that leads into a holding tank. And so that will have to be installed if you plan on going into Ontario.
Okay. Well, thank you for clarifying that. We are going to take a quick break to play a message from one of our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Drummond Island Yacht Haven is your home away from home while on your Great Loop journey. They are your first U.S. Customs port of entry after leaving Canada's North Channel and the perfect winter storage destination. They have a 70-ton travel lift, heated storage, and can provide transportation to the airport. Their full-service technicians help you get on your way quickly or can work on your upgrades over the winter. Enjoy fine dining, free Wi-Fi, and a full-service marina during your stop at Drummond Island Yacht Haven. For more information, call 800-543-4743 or visit them online at diyachthaven.com.
Bob and Chuck, we at AGLCA are big proponents of all of our members getting educated on the rules of the road, so to speak, for boating before they take on this trip. And we always recommend the United States Power Squadron as a great local resource in many places for that. What are the requirements, if any, in Canada that captains have any type of training or any type of licensing for actually piloting their boat?
Well, for Americans, if your boat is registered in any of the states or is a U.S. documented vessel, and your stay is less than 45 days in Canada, there you really have no requirement for any kind of license or training. But if you stay or plan on traveling over 45 days in Canada, then you must meet the requirements that most Canadian vessels and Canadian boat operators, and that is you must have passed a boating safety class and must have a certificate which essentially states that. Now, what would that look like? Well, that's our typical NASBLA-approved courses that are really available in most states now. And you must show that certificate. So that's really the only requirement. But again, less than 45 days, you don't have to worry about visiting.
Okay, good to know. Share with us some of the etiquette tips you might have for Americans boating in Canada. Should we fly a courtesy flag? Any suggestions for hailing lock masters, things like that?
Sure. Yes, flying a courtesy flag, I mean, that's something that no matter what country you're visiting, that is a courtesy that all yachtsmen should practice. And so we encourage that for everyone. As far as any other suggestions, like if you're obviously a lot of boaters are going to be using rivers and locks. And as far as transiting those locks, again, channel 16 is the primary means for communication and, again, for emergencies. There are some specific frequencies used on some of the other major canals. If you're doing some of the commercial ones, I know, for example, the Welland Canal, which is parallel to the Niagara River. If you're going through the Welland, it's primarily a commercial canal with large ships, and it actually uses channel 14 to reach its canal control. So, but again, you'd have to look at where you're planning to transit and where you're planning to go, and make sure you have the proper frequencies for contacting, say, the lock of masters and whatnot. On some of the others, very popular ones like the Rideau Canal and the Trent Severn Waterway. Frequently, there are lock masters who are on duty at each of the locks that can help you get through.
Is there a requirement in the Canadian locks for the number of people aboard? Can you lock through solo in Canada?
You can, from what I understand, you can in some of those popular canals such as Rideau and Trent Severn. But again, when you get into some of the commercial ones, like the Welland, again, to use that example, there is a requirement to have a minimum number of people. I believe southbound on the Welland, you must have at least two, and northbound, you must have at least three. So, yeah, there are those requirements, and I would, again, encourage anyone who plans on using these canals to make sure they do a little research before so they make sure they're meeting all the requirements necessary.
Okay. So once we've spent, loopers will spend a good portion of the summer in Canada. And once they've finished their journey through Canada, what should they do when leaving Canada, re-entering the U.S.?
Okay. The first thing, leaving, you don't have to report in that you're leaving. You just pull in the dock lines and get underway. You want to leave your courtesy flag up until you cross the international border. Then the courtesy flag comes down. That's the big thing that you want to do. And then you'll go ahead and prepare to come into the U.S. And here again, it's just about a reverse process of what you did when you went into Canada. As an example, you'll go into an area to clear, and you'll give your vessel name, documentation. And one additional thing that you'll have to have is a U.S. Customs decal. And with that, they'll ask you for the decal number. And you have to have one of these every year. The cost is $27.50 and applies to all boats 30 feet or over. They'll ask you for your Canadian clearance number. And then pretty much the passport, Nexus, or BR number for Nexus, your crew list, and when you departed the U.S., plus when you arrived in Canada, and then when you departed Canada. As far as items to declare, here again, they'll ask you if you have any liquor or beer or wine. And then they're also going to ask, did you buy anything, or are you bringing anything back? And this is an area of contention, because if you go up and have your bottom painted, for instance, or any labor done on your boat, that has to be declared in your declaration. So people should be forewarned. For example, if you have to buy two big 8D batteries, that becomes part of that dollar amount. So you want to have that ready to go.
Okay.
Continuing on, that should pretty well cover what you're going to have to do.
Is there anything different or anything specific that needs to be done if you're perhaps in an area where you're repeatedly crossing back and forth? You know, if you're in a waterway that kind of straddles the U.S. and Canada, is there anything different you need to do in that area?
Yes, and that is such a great question, because it comes up all the time out here on the West Coast as well as back east. I'd like to use Lake Erie as a good example, because people, especially fishermen, they fish back and forth. They'll be into Canada and back over in the U.S., back in Canada, back in the U.S. So what one wants to do if you're a U.S. boat is you call Canadian Customs on your cell phone and you let them know what you're doing. Say that we're fishing and we're crossing back and forth across the border. And they'll say, fine, that's no problem. Now, when you go back to the U.S., you do not have to clear customs. And the rule there is, if you stay on your boat, and even though you go in Canadian waters or any foreign waters and come back without touching land, then you have, in essence, not left the U.S. So you just come back and do whatever you're going to do. That pretty well covers it. Now, an example that comes up, though, especially up on Lake Michigan, where you have a lot of islands, and that is if you're on an island and say you have your home there, and then you take your boat and you go over to Canada and fish and back and forth, and you suddenly decide, hey, let's put the anchor down and have lunch. The minute that anchor touches, then you have entered Canada. So when you come back to the U.S., then you have to go through customs because you touched land out of the country. And that happens quite a bit up in Lake Michigan, I'm told.
Okay, well, good. That's helpful to clarify that. As we start to wind down on the time we have available, is there anything else that maybe we haven't discussed that you want to bring up that our members should know about crossing the borders between the U.S. and Canada?
One thing I'd like to mention is I would really recommend that the boaters East and West Coast get a Nexus card for you and your spouse or other members that may be going back and forth. It's good for 5 years. And all you have to do is call in on your cell phone and clear customs in that manner, and it takes 1 minute. Coming back from Canada to the U.S., you call the 800 number, and you can even go to your slip, for instance, at Roche Harbor, tie up, and then you call them, and you get your clearance. And I was told by the customs people 3 weeks ago that we can clear people that have Nexus cards within less than a minute.
Wow.
So
that
it's
sounds
a
like
very
a good time
worthwhile.
Saver. Is there a cost for a Nexus card?
Yes, $50.
Okay. Well, good. That sounds like it would be and a good time saver for
right. And also it'll
all
save
of our members headed
airports.
That way.
It'll save you time in airports as well because you go through the quick line with it.
Okay, well, good. Excellent. With the few minutes that we have left, fill us in. Will you be doing the border crossing webinar again? And if not, is there another resource for people to get that full scope of information that you cover?
We won't be doing it again for the next year. A webinar that we have coming up, one on thunderstorms and severe weather forecasting, and that's in September the 22nd. And then we're going to do one in January or February on onboard emergencies. That'll be the next one. And then we'll go back to probably the 500 millibar one, and then probably later in the year we could very well do crossing borders again. But you can always contact one of the local squadron, United States Power Squadrons, and they would be glad to come and put on a seminar for you, the Crossing Borders Seminar.
Well, wonderful. Gentlemen, I appreciate your time and all of the information. This has been extremely helpful for all of the loopers who are headed to Canada at this point. So I just want to extend our thanks and our appreciation for the time you spent both preparing for and sharing the information. We appreciate it. We will be back again next week with another episode. We are expecting next week to be able to cover actual information about the Canadian canals themselves, particularly the Trent Severn. So until then, safe cruising. Another episode will be available, as I said, next Friday at 10 a.m. Thanks so much.